Hey guys, it's Erin Andrews from Calm Down with Erin and Carissa. So they say you can't plan for the unexpected, but whoever said that obviously didn't know about Aflac. You probably know the Aflac Duck, but you might not know what Aflac can do for you. For example, did you know they pay cash that can help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover? If you get sick or injured, Aflac pays cash that can be put towards copays and deductibles to even non-medical expenses like rent or your mortgage payments. It's completely up to you. Get help with expenses health insurance doesn't cover. Visit Aflac.com to learn more.
What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself
in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Maybe your car's paint is faded, or you've been meaning to fix that scrape from the grocery store parking lot. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. Now, here's the best part. Stop by your local Maaco, free estimate, and you're going to find out how easy it is to refresh your ride. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. And you can do so with the great folks at Maaco. At Maaco, they are proud to be a trusted partner for drivers across the country. Whether it's a fresh coat of paint for your car or fixing up everyday dents and dings, Maaco is here to keep your car looking its best. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh. Better get Maaco.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
All right. Good morning, everybody. All right. So, Dr. Welcher can testify that the data he downloaded and analyzed and the damage to the Lexus is consistent with Ms. Reed's vehicle being in a collision on January 29th at 12:32 a.m. because he's a qualified expert and his opinion is based on reliable methodology appropriately applied. In addition, Dr. Welcher can testify that Mr. O'Keefe's injuries are consistent with his having been struck by a Lexus that is physically identical to Ms. Reed's Lexus, because this opinion is based upon, among other things, his experimental work that came into evidence without objection as to scientific methodology and application. However, he may not testify that Ms. Reed's Lexus collided with Mr. O'Keefe, because that conclusion is not based on the application of reliable scientific methodology. The problem here is not that the opinion concerns the ultimate issue, because in Massachusetts, that's not a bar to admissibility. Rather, it is that Dr. Welcher, the expert, is drawing an inference based upon more than scientific method. His opinions set the stage for argument and a permissible inference to be drawn by jurors through the application of their sound judgment to the opinions that they find credible. But the jurors are as well positioned to draw or reject the inference as is the expert. That is, the inference is not compelled by the application of any scientific method. So that's the ruling. All right, so the jurors are lining up. We should have them momentarily.
Thank you for the late call today.
Okay.
Morning, Dr. Welcher.
Good morning.
When we left off yesterday, I was asking you about some of your opinions. I'm going to ask you those questions again, but before we do, I'm going to ask you two other questions. The first is, I'd ask you to turn to your PowerPoint slide 110.
You want me to display it?
Please. I'm going to ask you a question about a series of your slides regarding this effort. This is 110. Could you also follow through to 111, 12, 13, 14, 15?
You want me to play the videos?
You don't need to play the videos. I just want to acquaint you for the question.
111.
12.
112. 113. 114. 115.
How many times did you engage in testing where your arm and forearm touched the rear right of the exemplar Lexus?
Three times.
In any of those three times, did it ever leave any paint on the underside of your arm or forearm?
No.
If you could turn to slide 130, please. What? Could you go back one, please? Perhaps it's 131, Dr. Welcher. There we go. Could you explain the significance of this slide, please?
Your Honor, this is...
Oh, can you take that down, Dr. Welcher?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Brian.
We're going to move forward. Yesterday, when we left off, I had asked you...
So we need to take this...
Sorry.
You can take the PowerPoint down, please.
I was in a different spot on this slide. Hold on a second.
That's better.
Thank you. Sir, I had asked you yesterday about some of your opinions.
Correct.
I want to ask you about some of your opinions relative to that last effort that you made regarding testing between the Lexus and your arm.
Correct.
You had mentioned earlier on in your testimony that you reviewed a number of pieces of information and offered that you relied on some of those pieces for your opinion. Can you share with us, for this part of your analysis, what pieces of evidence or information did you rely on for the opinions I'm going to ask you?
Relative to the testing on the arm contact on the taillight?
Yes.
So it was the physical evidence at the scene, the photographs of Ms. Reed's vehicle, to a certain extent, my analysis of the Ring doorbell and the One Meadows event, the nature and the...
Pardon my interruption. I just want to know if you're reading from something or not reading.
Looks like he's coming down the
screen.
Are you reading from
something? No, I am counting on my finger. So, I am counting on my finger. The Ring video doorbell, Mr. O'Keefe's height, you know, the type of shoes he's wearing, because I needed the same type of shoes. My exemplar inspection, where I matched up the heights, the locations of the lacerations, and then the text stream data as well.
That information that you considered, in addition to the text stream data you considered, considering both those areas of information, do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty in whether the damage to the defendant's Lexus is consistent with a collision with Mr. John O'Keefe on January 29th, 2022 at around 12:32 a.m.?
So there's been two potential theories that I've seen on that issue. One is a glass was thrown at the rear of the vehicle and shattered it. The second one was an impact to the arm. If the impact is basically more than approximately 8 miles an hour, it will likely break the taillight lens.
And do you have an opinion whether, based on the data and based on the physical damage and your testing, whether that is consistent with a collision or an impact with Mr. John O'Keefe?
It is consistent with the collision as long as it's greater than approximately 8 miles an hour.
You have an opinion whether it's consistent with an impact or collision with Mr. John O'Keefe on January 29, 2022 at around 12:32 a.m.?
With that caveat, yes.
In your testing, did you consider, or do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty, whether John O'Keefe's injuries on his arm, inevitably in the back of his head, are consistent with being struck by a Lexus identical to the defendant's Lexus on January 29, 2022?
Yes.
What's your opinion?
That it is. It is consistent with being struck by a Lexus and ultimately contacting a hard surface such as frozen ground.
And does that specifically pertain to January 29, 2022, around 12:30 a.m.?
Objection, Your Honor.
I'm going to allow that.
Yes, it does.
To finish, I'd like to ask you a few more questions. You've written some papers on sideswipe collisions or clipping. Can you describe for the jury and explain what a sideswipe collision is or a clipping and how that may or may not differ from a direct hit on a pedestrian impact?
Sure. So what generally differentiates, say, sideswipes or clipping contacts compared to, say, an inline impact or, say, a T-bone impact is what refers to that the object that you're hitting isn't accelerated up to the speed of the object that's coming in. So, for example, if I rear-end a car, that car will be accelerated up as a result of the contact, and they reach what's called common velocity, and then they separate. And so in a glancing hit, you can have a glancing hit, and you don't have what's called complete momentum transfer, meaning the momentum from the car, because it's a glancing hit, doesn't completely transfer to the object being struck. For example, you can drive down the road at 100 miles an hour and clip the mirror of a parked car, and you'll break the mirror off, but you're not going to go from 100 to 0 instantaneously. You're just going to keep going because you don't have all that momentum transfer. So when you have glancing contacts, you can have much higher speeds without a lot of damage to the car because you're only in momentary contact and it's a glancing type hit.
You mentioned about potential damage to a car. How about potential damage to the pedestrian?
It's the same thing. So when you have a glancing hit to a pedestrian, this is referred to as a fender vault. In this case, they call it a fender. Fenders on the front of cars, because most pedestrian impacts involve the front of cars. In this case, it would be called a quarter panel vault, which means you're kind of vaulting off the corner of the car. Those are much more complicated because you don't have that common velocity that I referred to. So it's difficult to calculate the exact speeds at which the vehicle contacted without a whole bunch of information in that type of crash. If the impact has occurred in the center of the vehicle and we knew where the point of impact was and the point of rest, we'd have a much better chance of determining how fast the vehicle was going. But when you have just a corner clipping or glancing, it makes it more difficult to determine, even when you have an area of impact, which is where the person was and they got hit, and a point of rest where they've landed, makes it more difficult for glancing contacts because you have that sideswipe problem where they don't obtain what's called common velocity.
And what are some of the other difficulties in attaining specificity in a sideswipe or being hit by a quarter panel as opposed to a fender?
So for a pedestrian, correct?
Yes.
So pedestrian impacts and how you move post-impact are very sensitive to your exact body position. For example, whether your right foot is on the ground or off the ground, whether your left foot is on the ground, off the ground, whether you jump up in response to the crash. Simply raising and lowering your arm changes the amount of rotation that's going to happen. Post-impact motion of the person. So cadavers, crash dummies, don't have any muscle reaction. So the motion of a crash dummy is just going to be like you're hitting a dead body, to where people will step, try and regain their balance if possible, will do additional activities that alters where they come to rest.
In your studies of direct pedestrian collisions by front or back bumper as opposed to sideswipe or clipping somebody. Is there a similarity or difference in type of injuries that you see?
Yes.
And what is the difference?
So in direct centralized impacts, you tend to get much more severe injuries. Really what's occurring is you're getting that momentum transfer. So it's more, you're accelerating the person up to the vehicle, they can wrap onto the side in front of the vehicle at higher severities, their head will hit the hood, their head will hit the rear of the vehicle. So when you have that direct contact, there's actually more momentum transferred to the actual occupant. There's more applied force to the occupant as well.
When you see direct impacts, is there ever the existence of lower body extremity injuries, broken bones in the legs?
So there can be both. Depending, and again, it's very sensitive to where the foot is on the ground, whether the foot's on the ground, as well as the severity of the crash. In the presentation that I gave at the Accident Reconstruction Collision Safety Institute on pedestrian injuries, I went through all the literature on lower extremity injuries and looked at what parameters affected that. And so depending on how it was loaded, some at 15 miles an hour had no injuries. Some at 15 miles an hour had some fractures. It depended on how exactly the foot was loaded.
Is it uncommon in sideswipe pedestrian accidents to see no lower body broken bone?
No, it's not uncommon.
Have you had cases that you've studied or been involved with where you've studied the effect of a sideswipe or a clipping impact where there's an absence of broken bones in the lower body extremities?
Yes.
I'd ask you to turn to slide 139, please.
I fixed those other two slides.
Okay. Could you share with the jury what this represents?
Sure. So this was a trial that I was involved with in downtown Los Angeles. I've redacted the name at the top. But this was an instance where we had, this is a image from the police report. Let me see if I can. So AOI in this diagram stands for area of impact. That's where the pedestrian was when they got hit. AOR is area of rest. And you can see we have information on exactly how far the pedestrian was thrown. Then on the right-hand side, we have photographs showing the impact to the pedestrian. This was determined by experts on both sides of this case to be between a 25 to 35 mile an hour impact. And then what you see is a close-up on the bottom slide of where there was DNA transfers, hair and tissue samples on the vehicle from the individual that was hit by the vehicle.
Next slide, please. And what does this represent?
So this is the decedent in the case, the person that was hit. He was killed at the scene. What you see on the left-hand image, on the left-hand image, is he had a massive laceration to his right forearm, but it didn't break his arm. There was no broken bones in his arm. On the right-hand side of this image, you see the autopsy report. What you'll notice is he had red marks on his leg, left buttocks, but he had no leg fractures. And again, this individual was hit at between 25 to 35 miles an hour.
Can you thrown. Expand that? I'm sorry.
Yes, yes, sir.
Do you want that expanded like other times?
There you go.
Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, my pleasure, John. Thank you. So to at the top, he had a severe brain injury, which again is the most common injury in pedestrian crashes. He did have fractures of the right 11th and 12th rib and a liver laceration. If you look at the extremities, It says right upper extremity. Again, that's from the shoulder to the end of the hand. Extremity wound with vascular injury. So no fractures. If you look where I was talking about the multiple abrasions, so when they're looking at the lower extremities, they're noting a number of red marks, but there was notably no fractures to the lower extremities.
Thank you. You can take that down, please.
Okay.
Dr. Welch, regarding your analysis of the data and the evidence in this case, do you have an opinion to a reasonable degree of engineering certainty whether the absence of lower body breaks to Mr. O'Keefe is consistent with the defendant's Lexus impacting in a side swipe or a clipping Mr. O'Keefe?
Yes, you could definitely have this type of impact and not have anything beyond, say, red marks to the lower extremity.
Thank you, Dr. Welcher.
My pleasure.
Honor, I would move into evidence subject to redactions. Dr. Welcher's PowerPoint presentation.
That's why you're being also listening to the caveat.
Thank you.
Thank you. The notebook.
You will find our presentation is consistent with the same as that I mentioned.
So let's put them both together now and decide later. Okay.
Thank you.
Those two slides are incorrect on the flash drive.
Okay, so we'll switch that. Thank you. What exhibit number is it? Oh. Two of those. Thank you.
So this is 206 A and B.
All right, Mr. Lessing, whenever you are ready. Sure.
Good morning, Dr. Welcher.
Good morning. We haven't been formally introduced. Your whole name?
Robert Alessi, sir.
Robert Alessi. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Dr. Welcher, the area in which you engage can also include, and I believe you used the term on direct, forensics, correct? Do you engage in any forensic activity in your profession?
Yes, the general umbrella of you basically coming in and giving scientific evidence in court applies to forensics. So my main job is action reconstruction and biomechanics, and so that's what I do. Sometimes it doesn't involve court. When it goes to court, that's generally forensics.
Right. So you're here today, that is my question. You're here today, at least in part, with regard to forensics, correct? Because forensics is the Latin term for it is basically you're going to have some type of court or jury presentation. It's for law, correct? Would you agree with that? It's for law, forensics?
I mean, exactly the way you asked that, no. It's for engineering and it's for biomechanics. It's in the court of law, I think is what you're asking?
That's exactly it.
Okay, yeah, certainly for the court of law, yes.
It ends up to a court of law, and forensics is a common term.
Yes, sir.
So
yes.
It relates to, or it's used in, or it's suitable for a court of law, the analysis. You'd agree with that's a general principle?
Yes.
Not a trick question. Okay. And so in forensics, what you're doing, among other things, is you're applying the scientific method and principles in here in a criminal matter, correct?
Yeah, you're trying to apply as much as possible.
Right.
And so the primary goal of forensic science is to uncover the truth and to provide objective evidence that can be presented in court.
That is generally correct. Again, there are elements, for example, this analysis that are relying sort of on subjective evidence, like the testimonial, the witness statements. So it's not solely based, but ideally you'd want it as much as possible based on objective data.
So you would agree that truth and objective evidence is part of the presentation in terms of information for forensics in a court of law?
Certainly objective information. Truth sometimes, again, can be subjective.
Oh, so you don't believe truth? You believe sometimes truth applies sometimes it doesn't?
If you know for a fact it is true, but if you take someone's deposition testimony, you have to look at it relative to the evidence, and it's either consistent with the evidence or not.
Okay, so now let's go to your direct examination that you just went through.
Please.
Hopefully this is fairly straightforward. You have testified to, and it's varied a bit, a reasonable degree of engineering certainty. Is that correct?
Correct.
Have you used the word sometimes to reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
I may have.
Right. So
I don't know.
In terms of your role as a biomechanical engineer and accident reconstructionist, is it important to engage in a critical analysis of the data?
Critical analysis? Yeah, I think it's important to have a critical analysis. You want to try and look at it from all sides, consider all possibilities.
So it is therefore important to try to review the data as objectively as possible. You had mentioned sometimes subjectivity comes in, but I understand the goal is to try to look at it as objectively as possible, correct?
Correct.
Now, you stated with respect to your conclusions early on in your direct testimony and your analysis that you don't, and I think I've got it quoted, you don't have a dog in the fight. Is that what you said, sir?
I did.
And that you, quote, don't care, end quote, about the outcome. That's what you made a point of saying in the beginning,
correct? That is 100% correct.
Now, you simply follow the data. Is that correct?
I try to do that.
You try to do that.
I'm not perfect. So okay. I do my best. I believe I've done it here.
Okay. So in terms of you've agreed that you apply the scientific method, so I want to see if you're in agreement generally so the jury can understand what the scientific method is. Are you familiar with NIST, National Institute?
Yes.
Yeah. So would you agree with this definition of the scientific method? The systematic pursuit of knowledge involving the recognition and definition of a problem, the collection of data through observation and experimentation, analysis of the data, the formulation, evaluation, and testing of hypotheses, and where possible, the selection of a final hypothesis. Is that a general fair statement of the scientific method?
So for forensics, you'd have to add in the testimonial evidence aspect of it. So those are testimonial or things are in evidence. So frequently there's one or two versions and you're trying to match which version is most consistent with the evidence.
Okay, adding that to what I stated relative to NIST, you would agree that evaluation and testing of hypotheses and where possible the selection of a final hypothesis is the scientific method, correct?
Generally, yes.
Is it correct that a proper biomechanical injury analysis utilizes a sound scientific methodology that's been subjected to peer-reviewed and a publication that's been generally accepted in the engineering community?
Well, I can't. So this, I've done my analysis here, biomechanical analysis. I can't submit this analysis to peer review. I'm not allowed to give this to people outside the court. So there would be no way for me to submit my analysis for peer review. So this occurs forensics all the time. The forensic analysis in court generally never goes under a peer review process. The methodologies underneath it, and looking at, like, for example, I think I referenced 25 papers in my report. That goes to the issue of trying to follow the science. 26.
So I think you may have misunderstood my question, mm-hmm. sir. I was talking about your methodology, mm-hmm. your biomechanical injury methodology. The methodology that you use and apply is to be subject to peer review and general acceptance in the engineering community. Is that correct?
So I have no way of publishing this analysis. You're asked peer review, like you said, means I give it to my peers. I send it out to somebody to review for the scientific method. That's what the peer review process is. So I will gladly send this out to peer review with the court's permission, but I haven't and cannot do that.
Sir, my question is mm-hmm. not your analysis here in this case. Oh. My question regards the methodology that you use here. Is the methodology, you said 26 references, right? My question is simply, is the methodology that you used for your analysis in this matter, is the methodology for a proper biomechanical analysis, should that methodology be generally accepted in the engineering community?
I think with the forensic application, yes.
Okay, that was my question, just the methodology. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, the scientific method that you've used in this case, part of the use of scientific method, the purpose is to avoid what is called bias in the scientific method, right? Not cultural bias, but just bias in terms of the application of methodologies and principles. You would agree that's a pretty fundamental purpose of the scientific method is to avoid biases?
The purpose of the scientific method is to get the most logical and correct answer without bias.
Exactly. To do it with, apply the scientific method without bias being part of the application of the method, correct?
That's hopefully what you can do.
That's hopefully what you can do. That is the goal, right?
That is one of many goals, yes.
So, are you familiar with the term confirmation bias? And that relates, confirmation bias is part of a larger term. Are you familiar with cognitive bias?
Generally, I'm not a human factors expert, though.
Pardon me?
I'm not a human factors expert.
All right, biases are, don't you agree that cognitive biases are not just for one category. You would agree it applies to medical analyses, it applies to doctors doing studies, engineers doing studies, and other scientists doing studies?
So I'm not a cognitive expert. I think I would generally agree with it, but I don't want to step out of my lane. I'm not an expert on cognitive. I can talk to you about confirmational bias.
Sure. Let's talk about confirmation bias. Now, confirmation bias is actually when someone selectively gathers and interprets evidence to confirm one or another's beliefs, as well as neglecting evidence that contradicts those beliefs. Is that a fair statement of confirmation bias?
That is a statement. Yeah, it could be broader, but sure.
But you would agree that that is generally correct, what
generally,
confirmation
yes.
bias is. And an example of confirmation bias is not considering alternative hypotheses once an initial hypothesis has been selected, even though data and information might contradict the initial hypothesis. Is that an example of confirmation bias?
That could be, yes.
And confirmation bias is antithetical. It's against the scientific method. It's to be avoided, correct?
You would like to avoid it, yes.
Are you familiar with the term failure analysis?
Generally, you might need to define how you're using it for me.
Sure. So is failure analysis the enablement of a scientific examination of an alleged incident by beginning at the undesired consequences? Is that a fair use of that phrase?
I was thinking something different, like a piece of metal failing. I guess it could fall into that category.
Okay. And would you agree that the first question, or one of the first questions that are to be asked by a biomechanical engineer when conducting an analysis of, say, an injury, is how did this happen? Is that one of the first few questions that you ask?
No, that's usually the last question.
Oh, so for you...
So hold on a second.
Okay,
generally, what you want to do is gather data. You want to know what injuries there are, what evidence there is, like, for example, on the vehicles. And then the very last thing you want to know or define is, given all that information, how did it happen? So that's the end.
I think you may have misunderstood my question, sir. I wasn't talking about the method or the process. I was talking about when you get to answering questions, whenever that is in process. Isn't one of the questions, and maybe one of the first questions, how did this happen?
No, that's not one of the first questions. One of the first questions is, where's the damage? What are the injuries? What's the evidence? What black box or tech stream data do we have? What physical evidence was at the scene? So that is certainly not one. It is a question, but that question is at or near the end.
Isn't every one of the questions that you just mentioned part of the data gathering?
Correct. But, okay. But when you're gathering data, you're always asking yourself questions along the way, like, what is this? Where did it come from?
But you would agree that for you, at least some point, it's how did this happen, correct?
Yes.
And don't you ask that question to come up with hypotheses?
I generally have many working hypotheses as I'm working on the case. And then as the evidence comes in, I'm applying that to my hypotheses and either accepting or rejecting the hypotheses based upon the factual information.
Sir, how then, is it just a matter of logic or syllogism? If you're going to ask the question, how did this happen until the end, how do you then not get your hypotheses up front when, under the scientific method, you should be having different hypotheses up front? How is it that you ask, how did it happen in the end, and not go through hypotheses in the beginning? Can you help me with that logic?
Sure. I guess I misunderstood. Like, I was trying to give you an answer to how it happened. So when you're answering how it happened, or you want to be able to answer that question, you want to make sure you've looked at the totality of the data, accepted, rejected things as they came along, to be able to answer that final question, how did it happen? But along the way, like, for example, a right eye laceration, you want to know how that happened. So you look for the evidence of how that may have happened.
So you would agree then that questions of how it happened, formulating and identifying hypotheses, does and can happen toward the beginning of the analysis. It doesn't happen at the end all the time. Would you agree with that?
So the ultimate question of how did it happen happens at the end. The questions about the elements of what occurred to make it happen, those occur at the beginning, middle, all along the way.
You would agree that creating hypotheses occurs more toward the beginning than toward the end of the analysis. Is that correct?
There are probably more hypotheses in the beginning, but I am continually forming, looking at hypotheses, either accepting or rejecting them upon the evidence.
So you would agree that the creation of hypotheses does occur more toward the beginning of the analysis. You would agree with that?
There are more towards the beginning. The process occurs throughout the whole investigation.
Right. I'm asking about the hypotheses, sir. You would agree that the hypotheses occur more toward the beginning than the end, just the hypotheses.
So I don't know if you and I are saying different things. more hypotheses in the beginning because you have more questions in the beginning. You continue to form hypotheses as the data presents itself, so you don't stop the formation of hypotheses. It's just as you get more evidence, you window down the number of questions.
Maybe I can just this last question to make it clear for you, sir. You would agree, not analysis, which you added, as I heard it to the last part, just hypotheses.
Mm-hmm.
You would agree that even though hypotheses can be created and changed, perhaps all the way up to the end,
mm-hmm.
you would agree that it's important in the analysis to create at least some hypotheses, plural, in the beginning, correct?
Yes.
And once you create these hypotheses, would you agree that those hypotheses should be tested?
So if you take the word testing to mean testing compared to testimony, compared to physical evidence, yes.
And when you test those hypotheses, isn't it often the case that, particularly in your line of work, the one that most consistently produces the same injury will emerge as the mechanism of injury?
I guess it depends on the scientific evidence behind it. Again, sometimes we get very unique injuries.
So my question, sir, is this.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it the case that when you have multiple hypotheses, the one that most, out of all of them, it's a relative thing, the one that most consistently produces the same injury emerges as the mechanism of injury? Is that a fair statement?
I think generally, again, it's on a case-by-case basis. You have to look at the science and the facts of what you're basing it upon. I think as a general premise, what you're saying is accurate.
Okay,
but there's exceptions.
Fair enough. But it's a general principle with some exceptions. That's a fair statement, correct?
Yes, sir.
We're going to have several topics, sir, and what I'm going to try to do to make it a little clear is I'm going to say when I'm switching topics.
Oh, good.
So what I'd like to do now is switch topics.
Okay.
You're aware that the Massachusetts State Police has troopers who specialize in accident reconstruction, correct?
Yes.
And there are troopers within the Massachusetts State Police Collision Analysis and Reconstruction Section whose sole responsibility is to engage in accident reconstruction. Do you know that?
I do not know that.
Do you know that there are troopers within the Massachusetts State Police Collision Analysis and Reconstruction Section who engage in accident reconstruction?
Just based on what I've seen in this case.
Right, based upon what you've seen in the case, that's a fair statement.
And I just know that those people are doing it.
Are you familiar with a Massachusetts state trooper named Joseph Paul, P-A-U-L?
Yes.
And you
well,
know...
Well, I'm familiar with his reports. I don't know the man.
Okay, familiar with Trooper Paul through his reports in this case, correct?
Correct.
And are you aware that he was assigned by lead investigator, former trooper Michael Proctor, to be a reconstructionist in this case on January 29th of 2022, as evidenced by that report or those reports of Trooper Paul? Do you know that?
Well, you put a lot of things in there. I know he issued a reconstruction report. I don't know who told him to do it. So the first part of your question, I don't know. But I did see a reconstruction report from him.
You were retained. And so do you recall, the date January 29th of 2022, is that a rough time period of him being assigned, or you don't know when he was assigned?
I don't know. That might have been in his report, but I wouldn't have paid attention to when he received an assignment.
Do you know when the date of the first report of Trooper Joseph Paul? In this case,
I can pull it up. I do not know off the top of my head.
You know that the date of the incident in question is January 29th, 2022, correct?
Correct.
Yet your firm and you were retained for this case by the Commonwealth 2.5 years after the incident in question. You were retained, your firm, on September 23rd, 2024. Is that correct, sir?
No, I believe we were retained a couple days before that.
A couple days. Okay.
Right.
So,
actually, I might be able to find out if you'd like me to look at the documents.
It's not all that important. You would say it's within a week of September 23rd, 2000. It was in September of 2024.
I believe it was in September, yes.
Right.
I would want to double check.
That's 2.5 years from the date of the incident in question, if I did the math right, correct?
I never thought about it. Yeah, approximately.
And as we just discussed, and you stated on your direct examination, you have no dog in this fight, correct?
Correct.
On November 5th of 2024, your firm Aperture was paid $44,500 by the Norfolk County District Attorney's Office to conduct work that was at least similar to the work of Trooper Paul, correct?
I have no idea. I don't get the billing or the statements.
Do you recall whether Aperture has, well, do you believe Aperture is working for free in this matter?
Oh, no, I don't believe that.
We're
an engineering company. We bill for our time.
So you know that Aperture is getting paid for its work in this case, correct?
We are billing for our analysis work.
Well, you're not just billing, you're billing and getting paid, correct?
So I have not seen any of the payments. I would assume that we're getting paid, but I don't know that.
Sir, you are a senior vice president of Aperture, are you not?
I am.
You would know, wouldn't you, if your firm was not getting paid for work since September 23rd of 2024, wouldn't you?
No, probably not. Usually it takes, 9, 10, 12 months of not getting paid before the accounting department reaches out to me.
Exactly. So you've been on this for 2.5 years. So if it would take 9 months or 12 months, if you weren't getting paid, you would have been notified by that by now, correct? According to your own answer you just gave.
I've not been on this case for 2.5 years.
I'm sorry, sir. Let me go back to the question of payment.
Hold on. You said I've been on this case for 2.5 years. I was retained in September 17th-ish of 2024. So that's, what, less than a year ago?
Understood. I'm moving on to the next question because I want to move away from that discussion and just go right to the bill. You, as you sit here today, do not have a recollection of whether Aperture has been paid. Is that your testimony?
It has nothing to do with recollection. I'm not part of that process. We have an accounting department. I don't have any involvement in that.
Are you... So is your testimony you have no knowledge about any contractual relationship between Aperture and the Commonwealth?
Oh, no. I was sent a contract by the Commonwealth to sign, so I'm aware of the contractual agreement, but the day-to-day or month-to-month invoicing and billing, I'm not involved in that.
Okay. So you're aware there's a contract between Aperture and the Commonwealth?
I signed it.
And you signed it. And wasn't that contract obligating the Commonwealth to pay for the services of Aperture? Isn't that the purpose of the contract, in part?
In part, sure.
Yeah. It's a legal obligation of the Commonwealth. Your firm does work, and the Commonwealth pays for it, correct?
That's the idea.
Right. And so you know about that contract because you signed it.
Correct.
Also, you testified on direct that there was a purchase of a Lexus exemplar for your testing?
Correct.
Who pays for that Lexus exemplar?
Aperture.
And is that then cost passed on to the Commonwealth?
No.
So you pay for the Lexus, you don't pass that cost on, correct?
So what we're doing is we paid for the Lexus, we're keeping it till the trial's over, we're selling it, and charging the Commonwealth the difference in the price.
Exactly. That was where I was going, sir. So,
but they're only paying the difference. So, and in theory, if we sell it for more in California, then we'll reduce the bill.
Okay, I don't want to speculate. I just wanted to see what the obligation was.
So the obligation is the difference.
Exactly. So the obligation is the difference. Are you aware that on April 5th, 2025, the Norfolk County District Attorney's Office amended your contract? Are you aware of that, sir?
I am.
And isn't it the case that that amendment authorized the amount of $325,000 to be paid to Aperture? Isn't that what that amendment contract states?
I believe that's correct.
So the Commonwealth is obligated to pay at least $325,000, and is that correct?
That is my, you're asking me a legal opinion now about a contract. That is my understanding of how contracts work, but I'm certainly not an attorney.
And on top of that, are you aware that Aperture has been already paid $44,510 for its work? Are you aware of that?
The second time you asked me, no. I'm not aware of anything we've been paid.
And as you stated yourself, those amounts reflect, as you say, less than 6 months' worth of work?
That's not what I said.
Well, no, my question is, you've been on the case, you said, since September of 2024, when we were talking about dates, you said that was about 6 months that your firm's been retained. Did I have your answer correct about how long you've been on it?
I guess it's closer to 8 months.
All right, so 8 months. So for 8 months of work, about $400,000. Is that correct?
So there's three offices working on the case. There's the Boston office, there's Mr. Burgess's office, and there's my office in Long Beach. I only know about the billing from my office.
But you signed the contract on behalf of all of Aperture, not just your office, correct?
That I don't know. But I definitely did sign a contract.
Would it refresh your recollection as to who you signed the contract on behalf of, whether it's all of Aperture and all offices, if I showed you the contract?
Sure.
May I put you on?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, could you direct me so we're not wasting time?
What I'd like to do, Your through the witness, Your Honor, is just ask the witness a question with regard to it.
Why don't you just take a look at that, Dr. Burgess?
Thank you, Your Honor. There you go.
I have a few more questions before I do that, Your Honor, for foundation purposes, if I wanted to know your reflection.
Right.
Would you like me to start with
so,
refreshing?
Go ahead and start with your question. Go back to the podium, please.
Sure,
thank you.
Thank you, Dr.
Dr. Welcher, does that refresh your recollection as to the contract you signed on behalf of Aperture with the Commonwealth?
So it lists the legal address as my office. So for my office, yes.
So are you saying that therefore, and did you see the amount that was in the contract? Did that refresh your recollection?
Oh, no, I didn't look at that.
Do you recall the amount that of obligation that the contract relates to in this document? Do you recall that?
You just asked me that earlier, and I'm taking what you said to be true. So I was like $325,000. I have no reason to disbelieve that.
And is there also a total, do you recall the total maximum obligation for the contract that's listed in the contract? You
no.
Recall it. May I approach your honor?
Okay.
And Dr. Welcher, I am now going to, you asked me last time, I hope this is helpful.
Please.
You said please point to the applicable part so we can do it faster. I am now pointing to that part and see if you can just look at that and see whether this refreshes your recollection on the maximum obligation of the contract pursuant to this contract. Without saying what it is, just does it refresh your recollection?
No, but I don't have any reason to believe it's not correct. And that is my signature on it.
Right.
And we got started on this conversation tying it to, well, we got started on this conversation with regard to a statement you made earlier in your direct that you didn't have any dog in the hunt. You recall that statement in the beginning of your direct testimony.
You misquoted me. I don't have any dog in the fight.
You don't have any dog in the fight.
Correct.
Thank you. Now, switching topics.
Okay.
You submitted an updated PowerPoint presentation, the one that you went over on your direct examination. You created that presentation quite recently, correct, sir?
The updated one was where I had redacted or taken out slides. So in terms of taking out slides, I did add one alternative path a couple weeks ago.
Okay, my question, sir, is this.
Mm-hmm.
The updated presentation, we'll get to the changes later, but the updated presentation you created just how many days ago?
I'm going to say weeks ago.
Weeks? 2 weeks?
I don't actually know without looking at the documents.
Well, was it more than 3 weeks ago that you created it?
I still don't know without looking at the documents.
Do you know when the trial started in this matter, sir?
I do not.
Assume the trial started approximately April 22nd of 2024.
Okay.
Did you create your updated presentation before or after April 22nd of 2024?
I don't know.
Do you know when...
Hold on one second. Dr. Welch, I'd ask that you not do...
Not look at... Okay, I was going to try and answer his question. My apologies. I will shut it down.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
If I may, Your Honor, please take it. Are you able to determine when you created the updated presentation?
I think so. That's what I was attempting
Your
to
Honor,
do.
Your Honor, may he do that?
Yes, I'm going to see Consulate Zibar while you pull that up, please.
Thank you.
Dr. Welch, what I'm going to ask you to do is get whatever information you need for Mr. Alessi's last question. Mr. Alessi, I need you over there. So, and once you get that answer, I'm going to ask you to shut your computer down or at least put down the cover. Thank you. All right, so you can answer Mr. Alessi's question.
Thank you, Robert.
Could you give me the question again, please?
Yes. When did you create the updated presentation that you reviewed in your direct testimony?
So that addition I made was taken out. It wasn't in my direct testimony.
If you can just hear my question, it's this. The version of the presentation that you put on the screen, when did you create that version? I'm just looking for a date.
So to answer your question about the version on the screen, I created that yesterday when the judge asked me to take off some of the headers. So yesterday.
Okay, good. Now, the version before that, that you created yesterday, when did you create that version?
The day before.
And then the version before that one, when did you create that?
I mean, I save it every day.
Understood.
So every day.
So you've changed the presentation every day since when?
No, I don't think I've changed the presentation every day.
That's my question. My question is, how many times have you changed it within the last 2 weeks, your presentation?
Let me try and cut to the chase here.
Sure.
That slide was added on May 13th, and then it was taken out before I presented it here. So it was not in my presentation here.
Right. So thank you for that answer. So
you're
here's the question.
Your first version, as I understand it, of the slide presentation was January 30th, 2025. Is that correct?
Correct.
When was the next time after January 30th, 2025, that you changed that presentation?
May 13th.
Assuming the trial started April 22nd of 2025, you changed your PowerPoint presentation during this trial, correct?
Correct.
And how many times did you change your presentation after April 22nd of 2025?
Well, the last time they changed it was like 10 minutes ago. So in response to various discussions, I've been making continuous changes to it.
I want to make sure you finish your answer so I didn't interrupt.
No, I'm not sure how much granularity you want to that answer.
Right. So you created on January 30th, 2025. You made your
13th.
Pardon me?
Oh, the original one. Sorry. Yeah. January 30th, modified May 13th.
Right. If I could finish my question, I might be able to shortcut this. Thank you. So you created the original one on January 30th, 2025. You made your first amendment May 13th of 2025. And then before you sat for your testimony, which was yesterday, correct? That was the first time you sat for your testimony.
That is correct. I was here yesterday.
Days get foggy when we're in the courtroom, but it was yesterday. How many times had you changed your presentation from January 30th, 2025 until when you first walked in the courthouse yesterday?
Do you mind if I count?
Not at all.
So there was the May 13th change. Half of that was in response to objections from the defense. I had to add all the paths to where everything was. Then when I got out here, Mr. Brannon asked me to take out references to evidence about statements that I was not allowed to present. So that would have been within the last 3 days. And then I've modified it a couple times today based on rulings from the judge.
Okay, let's break that down. You said half of the changes you made on May 13th related to what? Because I want to know about the other half.
Sure, there were two changes. I added the extra path of 138, and then I was told that the defense was having problems with my PowerPoint, so I had to go in and add the paths to every single slide about where the evidence came from, because they were saying I didn't provide everything, and I had provided everything.
Right. So
that was the second half.
Got it. I want to go to the first half, sir.
Sure.
And I'm going to try to shortcut this.
Please.
And if I'm not clear, you just let me know. I want to talk about the first half. You called it, I didn't hear it. It was like, did you say path?
Path.
P-A-T-H?
Correct. The path Ms. Reed was driving.
Right. The what you made the change for May 13th, that first half, that wasn't something that was triggered by the defense. That was something irrespective of the defense, correct?
It was based upon her statements. Is she part of the defense?
All right, so that's what I wanted to get to. You changed the first half based upon statements you alleged that Ms. Reed made. Is that correct?
It's because I changed one slide. There was 130 slides originally or something like that. So half of the changes on that day, which was one slide, I added one line to the bottom of the previous slide.
Did you consider that change significant?
No.
Well, then why did you make it in the middle of trial if it wasn't significant? Because why didn't you just leave it off and then discuss it in terms of testimony?
So, A, it ultimately was left off. B, because it was insignificant and I didn't need to have it. So the way it got presented was exactly the way it was before May 13th. So it didn't change anything.
But it was significant enough for you to make a change to your presentation, correct?
So my goal is to be as accurate as possible. So when I saw the path that I gave, the way she could drive, I gave the possible paths. That was one of the possible paths that hadn't originally been included. So in striving to be as accurate as possible, including as much information as I could, I wanted to make sure I included that.
So you were striving. The clip that you used to make the change, you say you made the change based upon a clip you observed with regard to Ms. Reed. Is that correct?
I believe that, yes, that is correct.
Do you know that clip has been in existence for months?
I don't believe I got it until April.
So a clip that has been, assume the clip's been in existence for months. You just got
Dr. Welcher, I have to ask you not
sorry.
To...
I'm trying to be helpful.
Close your computer.
Yeah, let me close it. Sorry. I was trying to answer his question.
So I'm going to ask you to close the top.
Yeah, that's probably good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. So assume the clip that you said was the basis for changing your PowerPoint on May 13th after the trial started had been in existence for months. You just got that clip, you say, in April?
I believe so, yes.
What was the tell me the circumstances by which you got the clip. Did you ask for it?
I was told there was a new interview.
Okay. Who initiated the conversation about the new interview?
I don't know if it was Mr. Brannon.
It was someone associated with the prosecution?
Yes, I wouldn't have known about it.
Exactly. So if somebody affirmatively communicated with you when about this clip?
I need to look, but I remember it being about mid-April.
Mid-April?
If I'm thinking of the correct clip.
What were you asked to do, if anything, with regard to that clip?
When I got the clip, I wasn't asked to do anything.
What did you do with the clip once you got it?
So they then indicated there was this suggestion of an alternative route. So then I looked at the alternative route description and added the alternative route.
So it was suggested to you by the prosecution that you look at the clip and they pointed out that there was an alternative route they wanted you to look at?
So I took it to be, we have additional evidence. Please look at the additional evidence and add it to your analysis.
On the topic of additional analysis by Aperture, while this trial is going on, are you aware of Mr. Burgess submitting a report dated May 8th of 2025 in this case?
Yes, I received that report on May 8th.
Right, and so you were aware of the creation of that report on May 8th because you got a copy of it, right?
Correct.
Were you aware that Mr. Burgess was intending to submit that May 8th report to the Commonwealth?
Yes, we had had a discussion before that that he had found new information that changed the timing.
Oh, he had found new information. What is your basis for saying he found new information as opposed to the information always existed, it's just it was pointed out to him that that should be looked at? What's the basis of your understanding that he found new information?
Objection to the question.
I'm going to allow the question, but you have to ask it differently.
I will, Your Honor. Thank you. What is the basis for the statement you made that Mr. Burgess found new information?
I guess it was his meeting and our discussions. He indicated that he had found new information.
Did you ask him, what do you mean by new?
No, I took it at what he said.
So do you, as you sit here today, have any basis to say that that information is new as opposed to it's always been in existence?
Yes.
What is that?
What he told me.
Oh, so you relied upon the representation of Mr. Burgess. You didn't have any independent document to determine whether, in fact, it was new.
I don't quite frankly care whether it's new or not. I just care what's in the data. Whether it's new, old, I don't care. It's not relevant to what I'm doing. I don't say this is new data, this is old data. I just care what the data is.
Sir,
Have you ever, has Aperture ever submitted a report, a changed report in the middle of a trial for your mom?
I have no idea.
Do you know whether Aperture has ever submitted an amended report in the middle of a trial? You said you testified in federal and state courts. Can you recall one instance where Aperture has submitted an amended report in the middle of a trial?
So Aperture is like 290 people. I can only speak for myself. I have certainly done amended analysis. Only certain courts and certain legal systems require reports. But for example, rebuttal, analyzing testimony that comes up in court, getting trial transcripts, I very frequently have come up with new analysis during the trial.
Sir, my question is, as you sit here now, can you state one court case where you or Aperture has submitted an amended report in the middle of a trial?
I cannot speak for Aperture. I can only speak for myself.
Speak for yourself, sir. Can you then for yourself recall any instance where you submitted an amended report in the middle of a trial?
Amended reports? No. Amended analysis? Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Lessie, is this a good time for a break or five more minutes?
It's a good time, Your Honor.
Okay. All right, folks, why don't we take our morning recess again? All right, whenever you're ready, Mr. Lessie.
Thank you, Your Honor. And if I could please address an administrative matter that I wish I didn't have to address. Dr. Welcher was just using, at least my observation, his computer. He still has monitors on his desk. Could we have all that removed, Your Honor?
It was closed.
Closed, yes.
Did he open?
So it's just, did you just turn it on?
No, but I will. I closed it. You, like, went the computer all the way off, or just everything?
Is he going to need to turn his computer back on?
I do not see a need for the computer to be turned on. Do we have the ability to put the presentation and documents from our
So I'm going to see counsel outside that,
sure.
Please.
May I, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Welcher, we left talking about the amendments you made to your PowerPoint presentation, and... In terms of the amendments, are you aware that the defense counsel received your amended PowerPoint presentation at 3 p.m. on Memorial Day? Are you aware of that?
No.
And you began testifying the day after yesterday, correct, sir? Day after Memorial Day.
I testified yesterday.
Yes. Are you aware of any activity in this trial of any kind before you testified yesterday?
Again, as I mentioned, I've been getting random emails, and then I've been seeing it pop up on my news feeds as well. But once I was aware of the reclusion, I made sure to not review any of that. But as recently as last night, I got an email that said biomechanical engineering job, or like applying for a job, and I opened it up and it was some internet troll.
So I'm asking about emails from the prosecution.
Oh, no, there's been no emails about what's been going on. I mean, there's been scheduling. You know, when am I going to come? Things like that.
How then was it determined that you were going to be able to amend your power presentation if you weren't communicating with the prosecution?
I mean, they asked me about the witness statement of 138 right around May 13th.
How did they ask you about that, sir?
I don't recall if it was a Zoom meeting, a phone call.
So it was a communication with the prosecution. Might have been by Zoom, might have been by another method. But there were communications, what this trial was going on, relative to you amending your PowerPoint that ended up with an amended PowerPoint on May 13th. Do I have that correct?
I believe so.
going to switch topics.
Okay.
One of the goals of Aperture's analysis and reconstruction was to determine the location and timing of certain text stream events, correct?
Correct.
EDR data...
I'm sorry, my role.
Your role, yes. EDR, and just for clarification, EDR is Event Data Recorder, correct?
Correct.
So I'm going to refer to that, as you have before, as EDR, Event Data Recorder.
Sounds good.
EDR data does not show the location associated with a text stream event, correct?
In this particular vehicle, it does not.
And the EDR data for this particular vehicle, namely the Lexus SUV, also does not provide the time associated with a text stream event, correct?
Not at the time of this event.
So the answer is no, correct?
That is not correct.
So let me ask the question slightly different way. The EDR data does not provide the time. The EDR data for the Lexus SUV that you've been talking about does not provide the time associated with a text stream event, correct?
That is correct.
Instead, every text stream event is associated with a particular key cycle on the vehicle, right?
Correct.
There can be multiple text stream events in a single key cycle, right?
Correct.
And every time you start the car, this one you push the button, that's a new key cycle, right?
That will cause a key cycle.
And the EDR data indicates the number of seconds into the key cycle that the particular event occurred, correct?
The EDR data, no.
So EDR data gives you no information about the number of seconds into the key cycle that a particular event occurred.
You're confusing EDR data and text stream.
I'm just asking a question.
So
if it's yes or no, I'm fine with that.
EDR data will, depending on the vehicle, sometimes it has information about GPS date and time. Sometimes it has ignition cycles, which are a little bit different than key cycles, which is why you frequently have different ignition cycles versus key cycles in EDRs compared to text stream.
So let me ask it a different way.
Okay.
The text stream data indicates the number of seconds into the key cycle that a particular event occurs.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
In order to properly determine the location and the timing of a text stream event, it's important that you correctly identify the trip that is associated with a particular key cycle, correct?
I think I'm going to say yes, that text stream tells you the trip.
I'm just asking if it's important that you correctly identify the trip associated with a particular key cycle. And do so by determining... in order to properly determine the location and timing of a text stream event.
So the text stream tells you the trigger event, and it tells you the key cycle. So I'm not determining that. I'm reading that from the text stream data.
Okay. So in order to properly read, to use your verb, the location and timing of a text stream event, it's important that you correctly identify the trip that is associated with a particular key cycle. Is that a fair statement?
I think that's a fair statement.
If you associate the wrong trip with the wrong key cycle, then your estimate of when the text stream event occurred will be wrong, correct?
It can. I mean, you need to take the totality of the evidence in the text stream with the mileage, the overall timing into account.
So are you saying, sir, that if you have the wrong trip with the wrong key cycle, you can get the correct text stream event?
No, not necessarily. Again, you have to take the totality of the data.
My question is with regard to if you have the wrong trip with the wrong key cycle, then your estimate of when the text stream event occurred will also be wrong. Isn't that just a matter of logic, sir?
So, again, the text stream event tells you the trip and it tells you the time. If you're saying I'm, say, associating that with the wrong infotainment information or vice versa, then that would be wrong. But the text stream data tells you how much time is associated with each trip. There's no difference there.
If you associate the wrong trip with the wrong key cycle, then your estimate of where the text stream event occurred will be wrong. Is that correct?
You can't associate the wrong event with the wrong key cycle because it keys in the key cycle with the event.
Let me try it a different way. Your analysis or anyone's analysis in conclusions regarding the timing and the location of the text stream data are only as good as your ability to correctly associate a key cycle with a particular event. Is that an accurate statement?
No. Again, you need to take the totality of the data. So that is one element. You need to look, for example, at the mileage. You need to look at the timing of the events. So this is considered a tool in the analysis process. You need to look at the totality of data to see how it matches up with the physical evidence.
So are you saying that you can have an incorrect key cycle with a particular trip, but you can still get accurate timing and location of text stream data?
So again, you don't get incorrect key cycle with the trip. The trip and the key cycle are coded in by the text stream. If you are attributing event to the wrong trip, which has a fixed key cycle, that could be a problem.
Exactly. So if we could go, if Your Honor, if we could publish a slide, please, that is in evidence.
Okay.
Thank you.
What are we looking at? Slide number?
I've got slide 9. Mr. Wolk, I've got the correct one. Thank you, Your Honor. So I'm going to use the acronym VCH that you've used on your do you recall using the acronym VCH on your direct testimony?
Yes, sir.
And VCH stands for Vehicle Control History, correct?
Correct.
You viewed the vehicle control history on September 23rd of 2024, correct?
In addition to the PCS data.
You viewed the vehicle control history on September 23rd, 2024. Yes?
That is yes.
You took photographs of the vehicle control history, including key cycle 1167?
Correct.
And in this screenshot, we can see four text stream events.
Actually, can you zoom in on the key cycle?
Oh, sure.
Because I think when I got to, no, scroll. So when I got to it, you can see it was at key cycle 1264. The blue highlight was the last file that was written on key cycle 1167.
Right.
So to answer your question, I got it at 1264.
So if we can go back so we can see the four text stream events, I just want to reestablish the foundation here. In this screenshot, we can see four text stream events that are associated with key cycle 1167, correct?
Correct.
But isn't it true, Dr. Welcher, that there were actually 10 text stream events associated with just that one key cycle, 1167.
Correct. I gave you the original files.
Right. So you are aware that the Commonwealth had maintained up into your firm's engagement that...
Are you saying there's no basis for the question? All right. I'm going to allow the question and I'll hear it.
You are aware that the Commonwealth has maintained up until your engagement in September of 2024 that all text stream events associated with key cycles 1164, 1165, and 1167 occurred while the Lexus was in the custody of the Massachusetts State Police at the Canton Police Department.
Okay. So the objection sustained. You need a foundation, Mr. Lessie.
Sir, as part of your work in your review of the many documents that you referenced on your direct examination, did you review the text stream events associated with the Lexus SUV?
I reviewed the one I downloaded.
Pardon me?
I reviewed the one I downloaded.
Right, and did that, what you download, include T-Cycles 1164? Did it include that?
It did.
Did it include 1165?
It did.
And did it include 1167?
It did. It did not include 1166.
I didn't mention 1166, sir. I only mentioned 1164, 1165, and 1167. I purposefully skipped because I didn't understand you had reviewed it. So here's my question. You therefore, based upon the fact that you reviewed them, and you reviewed, you said it's important to understand timing, etc. That's very important in your forensic analysis, correct?
Yes, sir.
So let's go to the timing question in the and you understand where the Lexus has been at various points in time. You testified to that in direct, whether it was at the Canton Police Department, whether it was being towed, correct?
In addition to having Mr. Burgess' analysis of the data.
In addition to Mr. Burgess' analysis, so in that analysis contained locations of where the Lexus had been.
It contained where it had been and also include date and time, when it was turned on, when it was turned off.
Exactly. So not only did you have all the locations, you had dates and times associated with the location where the SUV, the Lexus SUV, had been, correct?
Correct.
Now to the question. Based upon that review, that knowledge, that understanding, that base, those bases, mm-hmm. you're aware, and you've reviewed, by the way, Trooper Paul's reports, correct?
I have.
There were two reports of Trooper Paul. There was his original CARS report and then a supplemental report that were listed in the documents you reviewed. Do you recall that?
I don't recall that, but I'll take your word for it.
I don't want you to have to take my word. Do you recall, sir,
no,
that there were report? Do you recall that there was a report of Trooper Paul?
Yes.
Okay. And you read that report, I assume, sir?
I did.
And it would be important for you to read that report and read it carefully because it addressed the subject matter that you were addressing, correct?
No. I did my own independent analysis. As a matter of fact, it would probably be more important that I don't do that to avoid confirmational bias.
But you did read Trooper Paul's report, correct?
Of course.
So, you therefore are aware that the Commonwealth has maintained up into your engagement.
Yeah, I'm going to see a sidebar on this.
May I, Your
Honor? Yes.
Thank you. Are you aware that over the course of the Commonwealth's in your investigation into this case, that the theorized time of the alleged contact of the SUV?
So there's two words to strike, theorized time.
Okay. Thank you, Ron. Are you aware that over the course of the Commonwealth's investigation and your
Mr. Lesson, the court reported kindly.
Thank you. I will. Do you have knowledge whether there is one time or more than one time for the Commonwealth's position, as you know it from reading documents that you said you've reviewed, that there are different times alleged for the incident to have occurred at 34 Fairview?
Objection.
Sustained. You can ask the question, remove part of it.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
You have to remove part of that.
Okay, understood, Your Honor. Do you know whether there is more than one time that has been proposed by the Commonwealth for the impact alleged to have occurred at 34 Fairview?
Objection.
Sustained.
No, I'm going to ask for an instruction.
I'm not giving the instruction now.
Dr. Welcher, in terms of the analyses that have that you have reviewed in this case, is there one time that you understand there to be for a hypothesis for the time of the impact at 34 Fairview?
Objection.
I'm going to see you again, folks. I'm sorry about that.
May I, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm going to move to, for the moment, we'll come back to the other topic a little bit later. As we discussed earlier, you've got on various documents, you're a biomechanical engineer, but I've also heard you make reference to biomedical. Can you just tell me what you consider yourself, sir?
Sure.
Is biomechanical engineer something you consider yourself to be?
Sure. My degrees are in biomedical engineering. The discipline within biomedical engineering that I practice is biomechanics.
Right. And so is it accurate to say that you are a biomechanical engineer?
Yes.
And you say that much in your report, correct?
And the CV and resume I gave you.
Right. Now, in your report, and Your Honor, I have no issue if he refers to the page of his report.
Do you have a paper copy or do you need your
report? If you, sir, could turn to page 9 of your report. And on page 9, you state, as a biomechanical engineer, I have no opinion on any aspect of, and I think you're referring to Mr. O'Keefe's, medical treatment or medical diagnoses. I have conducted an accident reconstruction and biomechanical engineering analysis of this matter. Did I read that correctly?
You did.
In that statement, I assume, given you wrote it, is a fair representation of your professional role in this case?
Yes.
And you go on to add on page 9, my biomechanical engineering analysis is determining the effects of physical forces on the human anatomy. Did I read that correct?
You did.
And on your direct examination, is it correct that you stated, as a civil engineer, you made an analogy, you assessed the cables and beams of a bridge, as you would assess the cables and beams of a bridge, you assessed the human anatomy, you made that analogy, correct?
The analogy that bones are my bridge elements, cables are muscles and ligaments.
Right. And you stated that it's the job of a biomechanical engineer to quantify the force acting upon a person to determine the cause of their injuries, correct?
That is part of what we do.
It's part of, but it is therefore something that a biomechanical engineer does, correct?
Given sufficient data, yes.
So, do you know what a force calculation is, sir, when I refer to that term?
I believe so.
What do you believe it to be?
Well, force is usually a physical measurement, but you can also use Newton's second law, which is force equals mass times acceleration.
That's exactly what I wanted to get. Newton's second law is, and sometimes referred to as the second law of motion. And the second law is force equals mass times acceleration, correct?
Correct.
And just sort of like simple algebra, sometimes you have one or more of those, but I'm focusing on when you're trying to determine, sir, you're pulling something out.
Calculator. I thought you were going to ask me numbers, do calculations.
All right. We need to do it with the court's permission.
Sorry.
If you feel you need to do that, just let me know.
You can just leave it right there.
Right.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
How's your car looking? Showing its age? Faded paint, dents, dings? Don't worry. Maaco is here to help. They're the experts in affordable paint jobs and light collision repairs, helping you keep your car looking its best without breaking the bank. Most cars on the road could use a little bit of love. And keep in mind, with Americans keeping their vehicles longer, protecting your investment has never been more important. At Maaco, they make it really easy. You come in, free estimate, and the expert technicians will handle the rest. With Maaco's national reach and community focus, you're not just getting top-notch service. You're actually getting a partner you can trust. Don't let those little imperfections add up. You want to keep your car on the road. You want to give it a little bit of love. And you can do so with the great folks at Maaco. Visit your local Maaco today and see how they can refresh your ride. Go in, get the free estimate, and the expert technicians will take care of everything after that. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
How's your car looking? Showing its age? Faded paint, dents, dings? Don't worry. Maaco is here to help. They're the experts in affordable paint jobs and light collision repairs, helping you keep your car looking its best without breaking the bank. Most cars on the road could use a little bit of love. And keep in mind, with Americans keeping their vehicles longer, protecting your investment has never been more important. At Maaco, they make it really easy. You come in, free estimate, and the expert technicians will handle the rest. With Maaco's national reach and community focus, you're not just getting top-notch service. You're actually getting a partner you can trust. Don't let those little imperfections add up. You want to keep your car on the road. You want to give it a little bit of love. And you can do so with the great folks at Maaco. Visit your local Maaco today and see how they can refresh your ride. Go in, get the free estimate, and the expert technicians will take care of everything after that. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
There's a time and a place for filet of fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Maybe your car's paint is faded, or you've been meaning to fix that scrape from the grocery store parking lot. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. Now, here's the best part. Stop by your local Maaco, free estimate, and you're going to find out how easy it is to refresh your ride. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. And you can do so with the great folks at Maaco. At Maaco, they are proud to be a trusted partner for drivers across the country. Whether it's a fresh coat of paint for your car or fixing up everyday dents and dings, Maaco is here to keep your car looking its best. Get started, visit your local Maaco today, get the free estimate, and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
How's your car looking? Showing its age? Faded paint, dents, dings? Don't worry. Maaco is here to help. They're the experts in affordable paint jobs and light collision repairs, helping you keep your car looking its best without breaking the bank. Most cars on the road could use a little bit of love. And keep in mind, with Americans keeping their vehicles longer, protecting your investment has never been more important. At Maaco, they make it really easy. You come in, free estimate, and the expert technicians will handle the rest. With Maaco's national reach and community focus, you're not just getting top-notch service. You're actually getting a partner you can trust. Don't let those little imperfections add up. You want to keep your car on the road. You want to give it a little bit of love. And you can do so with the great folks at Maaco. Visit your local Maaco today and see how they can refresh your ride. Go in, get the free estimate, and the expert technicians will take care of everything after that. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
There's a time and a place for filet of fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
How's your car looking? Showing its age? Faded paint, dents, dings? Don't worry. Maaco is here to help. They're the experts in affordable paint jobs and light collision repairs, helping you keep your car looking its best without breaking the bank. Most cars on the road could use a little bit of love. And keep in mind, with Americans keeping their vehicles longer, protecting your investment has never been more important. At Maaco, they make it really easy. You come in, free estimate, and the expert technicians will handle the rest. With Maaco's national reach and community focus, you're not just getting top-notch service. you're actually getting a partner you can trust. Don't let those little imperfections add up. You want to keep your car on the road. You want to give it a little bit of love. And you can do so with the great folks at Maaco. Visit your local Maaco today and see how they can refresh your ride. Go in, get the free estimate, and the expert technicians will take care of everything after that. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Maybe your car's paint is faded, or you've been meaning to fix that scrape from the grocery store parking lot. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. Now, here's the best part. Stop by your local Maaco, free estimate, and you're going to find out how easy it is to refresh your ride. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. And you can do so with the great folks at Maaco. At Maaco, they are proud to be a trusted partner for drivers across the country. Whether it's a fresh coat of paint for your car or fixing up everyday dents and dings, Maaco is here to keep your car looking its best. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
What if your top salesperson was 1,000 times more efficient? And what if a limitless digital workforce helped your number one find leads? A super team working 24/7 on their behalf. Thinking, acting, and solving complex tasks so more deals closed. What if with every sale, each customer felt like they were the only customer? That would be one very efficient sales leader. Now, imagine if every person on your team worked to the power of 1,000. They can with Agentforce, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.